Hello, world. Welcome to Discover Your Talent, Do What You Love, number 235. I'm creator and host Don Hutchison. Every day, I interview someone from around the world who has discovered his talents to do work he loves, to create a life of success, satisfaction, and freedom. Once a week, I interview a well-known expert from the fields of personal or business development who share experiences, tools, and insights to help our listeners along their journeys. Only 1% of entrepreneurs' pitches to angel investors or venture capitalists ever get funded. When John Lifsay and his partner Judy Robinette figured out that all of that unsuccessful 99% were making the exact same mistake in their money-seeking efforts, they knew they had a viable service to offer. Welcome to the show, John.
Thanks, Don. It's a pleasure to be here with you.
Thank you, sir. We're looking forward to our chat here. John Lifsay hosts the Successful Pitch podcast with investors from around the world and partners with Judy Robinette at Crack the Funding Code to help founders get funded. He's the pitch mentor at Starfast.net, the number one accelerator in upstate New York. John's book, The Seven Most Powerful Selling Secrets, has been translated into Spanish and Russian. John has a BS in advertising from the University of Illinois. So, John, we agreed that today's chat, our expert interview, is going to be taken directly, of course, from the title of your organization, How to Crack the Funding Code. This is an area that I have had experience with in a couple of entrepreneurial ventures, and it's really complicated and really easy to get led astray just because there's so many moving parts to it. So set the table for us and tell us why this is so important.
Well, Don, the number one and two reasons founders, startups go out of business is, number one, they don't have customers, so there's no revenue coming in. And the second is there's no funding. So if you don't know how to get funded to scale and grow your business, you will probably have a lot of difficulty staying in business, unless it's strictly just a lifestyle company and you're not trying to make it the next Uber or what have you. So only 1% of any pitches to angel investors or venture capitalists ever get funded. So that's a huge problem that Judy Robinette and I decided we could help solve and get people in that 1% club.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Okay, so just break it down into pieces. I mean, I guess you could start by telling us the difference between venture capitalists and angel investors, huh?
Sure. Well, there's several different stages of investors. The first one is friends and family. That's typically where people go first. Then there are angel investors, and they're called angel investors because they act like angels and come into your world and help you get funded. But they're typically accredited investors who have been doing this and have disposable income that they're willing to invest and possibly lose if the startup doesn't succeed. Mm-hmm. And then a lot of those angels join angel groups where groups of them pool their money together and make an investment. And that tends to be anywhere from 100,000 all the way up through $1 million. And then once you start getting in the 3 to 5 bigger investments, that's typically where venture capitalists come into play. And they all want equity in exchange for their investment. So that's the difference between just going to a bank, which you have to pay back a loan. This is, you know, we're going to own a percent of your company. And ideally, you get the right investors to join your team so that they can bring not just money, but connections and ideas.
Yeah, precisely. What kind of homework can people do, or what tools are there to help people figure out which groups of angel investors are best? And I guess that's where you and Judy come in, right?
Yes. Well, before you even start to figure out who the right investors are, you have to make sure you have something that's fundable and that you are coachable. That's the number one and two things we work with people on, is what's your business model? And it goes back to some basics of who do you help and what problem are you solving? And once you have those two things answered, then you can decide, and is it scalable? And then are you the right team to execute that? Mm-hmm. In other words, do you have something in your own background that makes you the ideal candidate to get something funded? Let me give you an example.
Please.
One of the clients we work with is Cole Smith, who has a military background, has served our country in various capacities, literally around the world, keeping the world safe. And he came back and wanted to do something about shooters in schools. So he created an app that allows people to instantly be notified when there's a problem, from a medical emergency to a shooter in a school. The old way of doing that was, you know, people would literally have a phone tree that they would call one parent, call another parent, call another parent. And then, you know, very time consuming, as opposed to an app that notifies first responders and all the parents that there's a problem, and then shows you a map of the school where the problem is and where it's a safe place to go, or even an ambulance coming knows exactly where to go as opposed to checking in and wasting time at the front desk.
Wow.
So he identified a big problem and had a big solution, and Judy and I helped him with his pitch, had him really define that so easily that hopefully, you know, what I just described is easy to understand, mm-hmm. and then what makes him unique. And then we put him in front of angel investors, and now he's got multiple offers. He's in what's called due diligence, where they take a deep dive after they're interested in funding you and really make sure that everything you said in your pitch is accurate. Mm-hmm. And so he's got the choice between two different investors that he wants to pick from, which is where you want to get to.
Forgive me, did you just say these are angel investors?
Yes, one is an angel investor, and then the other one is a family office. And a family office is yet a different kind of investor. Think of really wealthy millionaire, billionaire families that hire someone to manage their portfolios, and part of that is investing in startups. So that's a family office.
Oh, wow, that sounds great. Yeah, there are a good number, goodly number of those people, right?
There are, but getting access to them is everything, Don. Mm-hmm. That's really where Judy and I come into play is – we're not going to introduce anybody until they have a good pitch because that makes us look bad. But then we make sure that we make strategic introductions to the right investors. I know them from my podcast, and Judy knows them from being in doing this for over 20 years and sits on the board of Illuminate Ventures. So her network is incredible of the kinds of investors that she knows that look for certain things to invest in.
Okay, so you talked about who does the Proctor service help? What's the problem they solve? Is it scalable? Mm-hmm. Are you the right team? Okay, that's very savvy. That all makes complete sense. How do they determine how much money they get for what? How much participation? And how is that? Is that negotiated?
It is. The whole valuation is the term
that they say.
You know, if I give you $1 million and I want 20% of your company, you know, that means your valuation is XYZ, right?
Right.
So all that gets determined by a variety of things. If you're pre-revenue or not, that's mm-hmm. one valuation. Mm-hmm. If you have a history of people on your team or you yourself have started companies that had a successful exit, in other words, you either went public or another company bought you, mm-hmm. that will tend to increase your valuation because you have a proven track record.
Yes.
Or if you're someone that's got revenue already and you just need the investors to scale your business, that's obviously much more easily defined as to what the valuation is because there's some track record to project.
And so, okay, then the venture people are a different breed. Talk about the venture people just a minute.
Yes. They tend to want to be only investing in companies that have already some revenue coming in. Mm-hmm. So the angel investors typically are willing to invest pre-revenue. The venture capitalists look to see, okay, what other investors have you gotten to this point? Have you hit the milestones that you promised those investors you would hit, certain sales goals, that kind of thing? And then they come in and start saying, okay, now that's who invests in Uber and Airbnb and that type of thing.
Oh, okay, okay. Okay, well, tell us more. We're fascinated.
Well, I think the best thing to really know is how important it is to become a storyteller when you pitch, because investors hear about 25 pitches a year and only fund 25. So you have to make your pitch so memorable and easy to understand that it grabs their heartstrings and pulls hard.
You said they hear about 25 pitches a year?
2,500 and only fund 25. That's the 1% that comes in.
Oh, of course. They hear about 2,500 and fund 25. Wow. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
So that's why, you know, you have to put yourselves in their shoes.
Right.
When you pitch, the more you have empathy for the investor and the more you show that you have empathy for the customer that you're serving with your app or your solution, the better you are. The more you can define what the problem is, the better the investors assume you have the solution.
Mm-hmm.
So when you pitch somebody, even if you are fortunate enough through a warm introduction to say, okay, you can come and pitch our group for 10 minutes and then we're going to ask you some questions, that should only be 10 slides, a minute per slide, and you should make your opening so strong that the first 90 seconds makes them so enthralled that they lean forward and say, oh, this is something new. You've got my attention. I want to know more. And they are going to then invest the rest of that 10 minutes after the first 90 seconds.
Mm-hmm.
The biggest mistake people make, Don, is they think that people invest in the idea. And they get so excited about their app and they start talking about how it works. And that's not what people invest in at all.
Right.
People invest in the jockey, not the horse.
Right.
and you're the team, you're the jockey. So you have to sell yourself first, right, and open with some statistic that makes them surprised and stands out. One of the clients I coached, Martin, one of the things we do is make sure that everyone is really prepared, because you have to be confident, not cocky or arrogant, but confident, because they want to invest in people who are confident in what they're doing,
yes,
and show leadership. So I had him stack his moments of certainty through his life and write them all down. And it was a very powerful exercise. One of the big takeaways for your audience today, no matter what you're doing, if you need to build your confidence up, write down all the moments in your life when you went on a date, you knew you were going to get a second date. You went on an interview, you knew you were going to get another interview. You know, you went out with somebody on a job interview and you knew you were going to get an offer, or you won first place in a race in school, whatever it was that made you feel good about yourself because you accomplished what you set out to do. Write all those things down and stack them up like an air traffic controller stacks up airplanes. And when you have all those stacked up, that's what you want to have, that feeling before you walk in to pitch yourself for anything, whether it's a job or an investment.
What a great idea. Moments of certainty. I've never heard that. That's a wonderful idea.
Well, with Martin, he loved that exercise. He said, that was so powerful. And I said, tell me one of them. He said, well, I grew up in the Netherlands, but I'm originally from South America. And when I turned 18, my parents took me back to South America and dropped me off naked in the Amazon jungle to survive for 2 weeks, because in my culture, that's the rite of passage into manhood.
Mm.
And I said, guess what, Martin? We just found the opening to your pitch,
right,
because that gives me goosebumps and that's memorable. I said, what did you learn in the Amazon jungle? He said, well, I learned how to focus and pivot and persevere. I said, great. We're going to take those lessons from the Amazon jungle to the concrete jungle of being an entrepreneur. And when we had that pitch opening crafted and practiced, he won a pitch contest and got the funding he was seeking, because people were like, I want to invest in that guy that survived the Amazon jungle. He'll be, yes, able to survive anything.
Yes. Yes. Oh, what a great idea. Well, give us some other examples. These are fascinating. No, they are. They're wonderful.
It's all about telling a story that connects with people. One of our clients, you know, was going out and pitching, and he had a fantastic track record, but he kept getting feedback that what he was saying wasn't compelling. Mm. And I said, ah, well, let me look at your pitch deck. I see the problem. You're trying to be all things to all people. Tell me one story of one person you helped in one industry.
Mm.
And he said, oh, well, the skyscraper contractor came into the Apple store and was looking for a program that could keep track of all their contacts to get the skyscraper built faster, both inside the company and all the vendors they had to hire. And once they used our product, we solved that problem for them. And once we put that story into the pitch deck, he got the funding he was seeking, because the investors said, oh, now we understand what separates you from all the other customer relationship management tools. And we not only understand how it works in construction, but we can imagine how it could apply to multiple industries. But we had to narrow it down to one story. So the storytelling is everything.
Yes, great example. As people are pulling together their pitch and working with you, you folks, you've made the strategic side of it really clear. How do they tell the story about the team that's going to be working on it? Because the team that's going to be working on it is obviously pretty much everything, unless it's just square one by the entrepreneur. But if they've got any kind of track record, how do they tell that story?
That's a great question, Don, because most people make the mistake of putting up a slide with the pictures of their team members and a bunch of background about them, and then just read the slide to the investor, which is the kiss of death.
Yes.
You don't want to bore the investor. You want to inspire them.
Yes.
So you, again, tell a story about your team.
There
tell a story about how you met them. Tell a story about how you came up with the name for your company. Tell a story about how you have somebody that worked at a company that was hugely successful. You know, we recruited somebody away from Apple or Google to join our team. That's going to grab the attention of the investors. You're like, wow, that person must know what they're, you know, must really believe in this to join this team. Or this person had a successful exit. Or this person is uniquely qualified because they did X, Y, and Z.
Mm-hmm.
So people will remember the stories that you tell about your team members, and that's what makes it compelling, because they really want to know that these are the people that have the commitment, the guts, and the perseverance to make it happen. One of the investors told me, you know, we invested in Pinterest, and they had come to us and said, you know, we want to take the behavior of sticking pictures on refrigerators with magnets and digitize that and make that an online behavior. So they got the funding for that. Then they created it, and then nobody used it. And that's the kiss of death too, because most people fear their competition, and what they should fear is consumer indifference.
Ooh, yes.
So that team didn't give up. Right. So they said, well, what else could we do with this? So they said, let's figure out a way to let celebrities create pin boards of what's in their closet. And then people could look at that. And once they did that, then people started creating their own boards. But they had to figure out a pivot to make that right. something that people were involved with. I mean, the original YouTube was originally started by people who were creating a dating video site with videos.
Oh, I had no idea.
Mm-hmm. And then they realized that people, you know, that sounds like a great idea, doesn't it?
Yes.
Wouldn't it be better
yes.
to see a video of somebody versus a still picture on Match.com?
Yes.
But most people are too shy to talk about themselves on video, but they like making videos. So they went out of the dating thing and started YouTube.
This massive, massive, massive thing
yes.
that keeps on growing. Wow. Okay. So how different is it working with a group of angel investors, working with a group of venture capitalists? How is it different? Or working with the family office?
Well, the angel investors are much more willing to invest in something that doesn't have revenue. Whereas the venture capitalists, when you pitch, it's much more in-depth, a deeper dive into how much does it cost to acquire a customer? What are your barriers to entry to competition? What are you doing to grow your market share? What have you done with that money? Where the angel investors are most likely, you know, want to understand the problem you're solving, why you're uniquely qualified to execute it, and what will you do with that money to hit the first milestone. So it's all progression.
Is it because the venture folks have just more sophisticated backgrounds, and their processes and procedures are come from financial background and everything, so they're more they're more demanding on those things? I mean, what is that? And the angel maybe the angel people are a little more entrepreneurial and flexible or inexperienced. I don't know. What is it?
Well, the venture capitalists tend to invest a much larger dollar amount, $3 to $10 million,
okay,
depending on what round it is, whereas angel investors can be, you know, $100,000, $300,000.
Oh, okay.
So,
okay.
But we do find a lot of angel investors have a background of being successful entrepreneurs that had such a successful exit that now they're helping other entrepreneurs and helping them get started and paying it forward. And they know exactly what it takes to make a successful startup. And like what you said, a lot of venture capitalists come from investment backgrounds.
Yeah, exactly. Okay. Tell us something else. What's next?
Well, I think one of the big things to avoid is never ask an angel investor or a venture capitalist to sign a non-disclosure agreement. They will show you're naive. It will show you've never done this before. They will be insulted. They see so many deals. They're not interested in stealing your idea.
Right.
So don't ask them to sign a non-disclosure agreement. And the other big mistake we see people making is to say to an investor, you know, we have a new toothpaste. And if we only get 1% of all the people who brush their teeth, we're going to make millions. And investors do not want to hear that as your strategy. That's considered, you know, top down. They want bottom up. They're like, okay, we have a new toothpaste and we're going to start selling it at farmers markets
yes.
and then get into grocery stores and then grow, you know, bottom up, show how you're going to grow from that. So those are two big mistakes that people make, asking investors to sign a non-disclosure agreement, saying if we only get 1% of the market. And then another big mistake to avoid is we don't have any competition.
That's the most profoundly stupid thing anybody could say. Everybody's got competition.
Yes, and it also makes it look like, well, then if you don't have competition, there's no market, right?
Precisely.
Yeah.
I love that. We don't have any competition. So, that's good.
So that's really important that you and you know, and another mistake is not knowing how much money you need. If you can imagine that people go, well, I'm not sure if I need a million or 2 million. Oh my God. You know, you confuse investors, and the confused mind always says no. They need to know exactly. You need to show that you've thought this through. I need a million. It's going to last me 18 months. And that allows me for the 12 months out of that 18 to just focus on hitting milestones. And then the second 6 months of that 18, I'll start fundraising for the next round.
Yes, exactly. Well, this must be an utterly exciting field to be in, because it takes so much imagination, and there's so much, I'm sure you get thrown at you, both of you, these so many innovative ideas, and your imaginations must just explode with what the possibilities are if the team is good enough and everything. It must just be fascinating.
It's very rewarding. I mean, Judy and I have such a passion for helping entrepreneurs become storytellers, because that storytelling skill allows them to not only get people to their team, and they use it to attract people to get customers.
Yes.
So we help them with all of that. And then we, you know, work with them on their exit strategy. Now, investors are looking for a return of 3 to 5 on their investment. So if they give you $1 million, they want to see a 3 to 5 return on that. So 3 to 5 million is going to be what they get back in 3 to 5 years.
Oh, okay.
And that typically only happens when somebody big buys your company, right, to get that kind of a return.
Okay.
So we help them identify who could be your potential buyers. You know, what is your exit strategy? So there's a whole step-by-step process in Crack the Funding Code that really helps people get prepared for the pitch, and especially the questions that they're going to get asked during the pitch and after the pitch, so that they're not a deer in headlights, but instead are prepared and confident. And just little things, Don, like if someone asks you a question, one of the best pieces of advice is to repeat the question. What I heard you say is.
Yes.
So that you really make sure that you understood the question properly, because there's nothing worse to lose your credibility with an investor or anybody as not answering the question.
Yes.
And it makes it seem like you're trying to avoid the question, or that you didn't hear it properly and you're frustrating them, or you don't want to answer the question. And the minute you really aggravate people when you do that. And oftentimes people aren't consciously trying to avoid the question. They didn't hear the question properly. So if you restate the question before you answer, it gives you another couple of seconds to think about your answer, but it also really makes sure that you heard the question properly and you're giving them the answer they want.
Yes, beautiful. What do you do in the cases where, two sides of the coin, where somebody is so confident that he or she comes off as arrogant, or the other side is they're not confident, or they're not putting forth what I would think investors would look for most of all, is besides brains and good strategy, is an authentic side. This is a this is a person that they can relate to as a genuine person. What do you do with either side of that coin? How do you coach that?
Well, let's start with the first side.
Sure.
The arrogant person, right?
Yes. Hubris.
We don't let those people into Crack the Funding Code, because if they're not coachable to us, they're not going to be coachable to the investors.
Perfect.
So that's a red flag right away.
Yes.
And nobody knows everything. You have to have some humility and willingness to learn and take feedback from us as well as the investors. So for us, for most investors, it's just a no-brainer. You know, the average length of a relationship for a very successful company can be, you know, years. And so they want to do business with people they like and trust.
Yes.
And so you have to make sure those qualities come across. Now, if someone doesn't have enough confidence, one of the key steps is what I said earlier, which is stacking your moments of certainty.
Yes.
And then I also have them practice the pitch. Okay. There's nothing more reinforcing to give your confidence a boost than practice your pitch. Most people say, oh, I just want to wing it. Like, oh, my God. Well, let's hear what that sounds like. And then there's something else that people really love, which is the superhero pose. Have you heard about this?
No.
Harvard research studies have proven that if you stand like Superman with your shoulders back, your hands on your hips, imagining there's a cape billowing behind you like you're Superman or Wonder Woman, and hold that for 2 minutes, your testosterone level goes up and your cortisol stress level goes down. Surgeons do it before surgery. And so I tell people, do that the day of your pitch. Hold that superhero pose and you will feel more confident. You practice and you do stack your moments of certainty. That's three big things in your toolbox that most people don't have to build your confidence.
Okay, say that again. That's fascinating. So you pull your shoulders back and
stand
up straight for 2 minutes?
Yep, 2 minutes with your hands on your hips.
Oh, yeah, your hands on your hips. Okay.
And your shoulder, you know, like imagine how Superman stands.
Precisely.
Mm-hmm. Oh. Yeah, so the research is there to prove it works. So it's a great tip.
Okay, this has been very illuminating and very informative. I know listeners have taken down a zillion notes because this is worth its weight in gold, to say the least. Any final comments, any final tips or observations that you want to add?
Sure. If anybody wants to text the word funding to 66866, I will send them the three mistakes to avoid when you're pitching for free.
Oh, that's great.
Yeah, 66866, text the word funding, and you'll get a free PDF from me on the three mistakes to avoid when you're pitching. And I would say that really make sure that you know your why. Mm-hmm. Why are you doing this? Why are you so passionate about this? Because you need to go back to that when bumps come up in the road, and they will come up. Yes. There'll be problems, there'll be challenges, there'll be all kinds of things that stop you from going, oh, why am I doing this? You need to go back to, I want to make a difference in the world. You know, in the case of Cole Smith, who's helping make the school safer, you know, he's got a big why. He's got five kids, right? he's got a military background, right? Yes, so he wants to make the world a safer place. It's a bigger goal than just making money.
Yes, yes, precisely. Well, and the website, give us the website.
It's johnlivesay.com, L-I-V as in Victor, E-S-A-Y. And my podcast is there, more tips, all kinds of blogs on how to conquer fear, all kinds of good stuff.
Yeah, I listened to your podcast the other day. It's terrific.
Thank you.
That was really terrific. Okay, John Livesay, great having you with us today as an expert. It's just a real pleasure. Thank you very much. We'll do this again.
My pleasure.
Our listeners, thank you. Our listeners know that you can go to discoveryourtalentpodcast.com and go to podcast in the nav bar, and you can find the show notes of this fine interview with the contact points. Makes it easy. And if you go to our homepage, discoveryourtalentpodcast.com, you'll see our infographic that we put together. It's based on the thinking of the brilliant men and women from probably a couple of 100 years about how to solve some of the basic career planning problems and life planning problems, strategic problems. What do highly successful people actually do to succeed? 12 proven career building strategies to help you do what you love. Some of the tips that John gave us today just dovetail right into those. Actually, they all do. So take a look at that. It's free, and we've had great feedback. You can also subscribe to our podcast on iTunes and Stitcher. If you like interviews like this and other individual interviews, we'd love to have you join our tribe. In closing, every one of us is born with unique talents and gifts. We don't learn them. We simply cannot ignore them. They're just a part of who we are, our DNA. Whenever we discover them and use them in our lives and careers, we do not merely survive. We thrive in every way possible. So until next time, all my best, and whatever you do, have fun out there today.